Okay, so now I wanted to ask, sort of just backtracking a little bit in terms of how you came into urban ministry.
Yeah, right.
How you arrived at First Baptist.
I think the beginnings, Angela, related to my experiences with A.J., Mr. Gregory, older than I. He's now passed on. And both of us just felt like we should get out into this neighborhood. And we were doing what you might say, just knocking on doors, trying to talk to people about Christ.
And when was this?
Let's say 13 years ago. I need to check and find out, you know, approximate year that it began. But so we would, and then several of us thought, well, we'll just try to begin a little Bible class down here. And my wife knew an alcoholic who lived right down here. So we just asked if we could come in to his room or apartment. And I guess our focus then was trying to reach the adults. We'd not leave out the children, but invite them here, whatever, whatever. But then the children came up, and probably Joyce was playing the accordion. They wanted to hear. They wanted to see. I can almost see their little faces now come up to where we were on the porch there. So it didn't take us too long to realize that they're the ones really interested. Not that the adults were unimportant. No, not at all. We're still interested in them. But we did find out through this little experience in the beginning days that the children would respond. And
again, we're talking about black families.
Black, right. The alcoholic was white, but somewhat, I mean, the black kids were just coming up to hear the music, probably. I don't think they cared much about what we were saying, but, you know, the music, I think, got them. I think Joyce's accordion got them.
Okay.
And then we asked the lady across the street. She would have given us her backyard, but then we began picking up children. I guess we started right here and down on Queen Street, which is one block over from Roxborough Road, and that's where this lady lived who moved out, you know, and we learned to know her. She joined the church. She became a Christian, joined the church. We ministered to her two boys, a single mom. And it just, you know, grew and grew. I'd say mainly from right around here, but we reached on out. And where kids who lived here move out, we still try to hang on to them. But as they grow older, we sort of try to let them transport themselves. But that's sort of the beginning. The children coming around. I think that's where it all began. That was sort of the beginning, if I can remember, the beginning of the children's ministry, which now is somewhat comprehensive. And if you wanted to touch into several, we've talked about the choir for the Hispanics. Mm-hmm. Need to be something like that for the blacks. But the black children sing now in our church children's choir. A black kid, Antonio, right down here, is a very good singer, identified by a leading music teacher, lay music teacher, but I'd say she's professional or almost. You know, I know she said Antonio's a good singer. I mean, she can, you know, a teacher's supposed to know who's good and who's not so good. He's good. So he sang a solo in our children's concert at Christmas. You know, so this type thing, it's pretty much integrated together. I think the right kind of integration. I think the right kind of integration. Now, they may need also sometime a black choir. That would be fine. But, you know, the blacks are pretty much integrated here with the whites now. The Hispanic from a different religious background, probably. Some of them maybe no religious background, but hopefully some type of integration. And it is to a small degree. A few Hispanics have come here. And maybe that will be more and more, but we have them involved in what we call extra good news. Mm-hmm. Extra good news. Good news is a very familiar two words. The gospel, good news. We have so much bad news, you know, good news. And so our director just named it extra good news. And now they have a theme song, and they can yell, extra good news. Anyway, this is going to be a program, a ministry to inner city children. It's targeted totally. Now, I think we'll get into teen ministry sometime, but to children, elementary children. We meet every Saturday. This began about 5 weeks ago. We planned on it. We ran into a tremendous successful model in Brooklyn, the ghettos of Brooklyn, where there's a large reaching 10 or 15,000 kids a week, 45 buses bringing them in into a big arena, 800 at a time. And so we've learned there's methods, you might say, combining with other methods that are also good. But if you saw this on Saturday, you would see two things. In the gym, we've had up to about 100 kids already at one time, Hispanics and blacks. The first part would be excitement, excitement, games, moving games, involvement of kids in a pulling rope pulling contest, or, man, they do all kind of things. They like who can eat it the fastest. You know, I mean, all kind of exciting action games they love. And music, upbeat music, and things like this, contests. So real excitement. They love. They can yell. You know, have boys on one side, girls on one side. And the leader will say, all right, how about it, girls? Can you win? Okay, boys, are you going to let them win? You know, I mean, it's excitement. Very good kind of excitement. Okay, then they've learned the simple rules from day one that we learned in Brooklyn, in the ghettos of Brooklyn, in the metro ministries there. Each of the leaders has a whistle. And they've learned, and they have the rules that are flashed by overhead onto the wall, so they can learn these rules, like stay in your seat, follow the directions. Simple thing. The whistle means quiet. And it's amazing. You ought to see it sometime, because schools can learn from what we're doing. Schools have problems, don't they? They can learn from what we're doing. Okay, they have learned, and this it works very well. Not perfect every time, but they can be yelling 10 minutes ago. Then when the whistle blows and when John Blake stands up and says, now we're entering into the most important time of this program. And that's our teaching, preaching about Jesus and the Bible. He might have to blow that whistle a time or two, but then he requires them to look right at him. And it's very close to well done. It's amazing. 100 kids, half girls, half boys, they've been yelling. Now they're looking at the preacher.
And these are blacks and...
They're whites.
Okay.
They're whites. We want, Jackie's on our committee.
Okay.
And one of the pastors over in the inner city, black pastor, is on our committee. But we want. In fact, we're doing something right now that we're saying something like this, again using the word intentional, probably. We want and we intend. We want to make it happen. And we have one black man who's up and down off of the platform, one of our leaders. He's not, you know, we have two main leaders, and they're white guys. But we have blacks who are helping us with the children, doing various things to make a program go. But we want blacks in key leadership. That's our intent. We found that I guess blacks are a little bit like whites and other people sometimes. It's hard to identify. We want, believe me, you know, blacks to be up on that stage all the time in key leadership. But and we would like for that to happen. We just haven't found that person. And we've got the word out. Man, we've been into black churches over there, you know, and shown them about the Metro Ministry, which in Brooklyn, which we're modeling here in Extra Good News. And hopefully we have not overlooked anybody, but I guess it's something like this, Angela, and maybe true somewhat with people in general. It's hard to identify and find a person who will make that commitment, who will, you know, will stand in there with us. Now, as I say, we've got some assistants, you might say, who are black, and don't think we have any adult Hispanic yet. But so I think it's going well and probably started about as well as it could have as far as a good mix of the black and white races. This man who's leading out is very committed. He resigned early, I guess in his maybe early 40s, mid-40s, whatever, from Riverside High School here in Durham as a teacher some years of having taught and gave that up, feeling God was calling him. He was already part-time in children's ministry here. That had not begun at Extra Good News yet. But children's ministry, that was his desire. And then when he found out about what was going on in Metro and the great opportunity to do it here, I think God had prepared him. So that's how that started, a white man, but called of God to do these ministries focused on children. That's one of the main ministries. I think, over 30 kids on my bus. This black church over here has buses. You know, some churches have buses and vans. They loan buses and vans that we can pick up the kids. I have three districts stretching right back over behind our church here, where there are hundreds, if not several, maybe 1,000 or 2 people, Hispanics and blacks. So we're picking them up. I've got a megaphone that I sort of stick out the window. You know, it's got battery. Man, you can hear that thing. And I say, extra good news, bus, children, extra good news. Don't miss the big Valentine party last time. You know, and so we're just beginning, though. We're just beginning. And, I mean, kids are responding to this. They're responding. They have fun, but then they hear the simple story of Jesus in words and language that they can understand. You know, the average pastor's sermon is, he may not consciously think this, but he is sort of speaking to me and you, adult people. Right. And let's face it, the children can't understand much of what's being said. Right. Really? This speaks in children's language. And it's just phenomenal. And another thing that we do, you know, the new downtown Y, you may not know, but just about 3 blocks from here. I mean, I think this is within the providence of God. That new Y, I think it's $9 million Y with a huge 2 swimming pools, I guess, and huge gym, a good direction. They are reclaiming, you might say, the Christian part, and they're not afraid to say it, in YM Christian Association, YMCA. We see that, and we're glad for that. But anyway, when they first built over here, I remember the groundbreaking. City Councilman Howard Clement was there, a good friend of ours who's helping us in this extra good news, a black councilman here. I just happened to pop in when they were doing the groundbreaking. Didn't even, I guess, know what was going on exactly when anyway. Anyway, the thing was built. So several of us went and say, what can we do to work together to bring the children in here? Let them benefit from the recreation, but have a Bible class. So it didn't take long for Phil Henderson, who was a former outstanding basketball player, black guy, about 10 years ago at Duke. He was on the staff there in the area that in a Christian, in the area involving outreach to the community. So, you know, that was what he was thinking about. So it didn't take long for him to put together what is called Generation Excellence. And it involved basically 2 things. We could, for nothing, for free, we had to have some adult supervision. Basically, it's supposed to be 1 adult for 10 children, but bring the kids in there. These same kids, some of them that we've been working with, took them yesterday. I take them on Tuesday. And they can swim and then go to class. They got to do both. Of course, they like to swim. You might hesitate a little to go to class, but they got to go. I mean, it's part of the Y program for them, part of Generation Excellence, working pretty good. All right, that's a great blessing, you know. Okay, we do several things here, like the GAs for the boys, it's RAs. I told you about the black kids being integrated into our children's music. Tonight, they will be in it practicing in the class at 6 o'clock under qualified music teachers. We have a youth minister. They have youth programs. They were just, in fact, I think it's on that thing there. You see, True Love Waits, that means appropriate relationships with opposite sex. It's sort of a thing that's rather, at least amongst the Baptists, probably others also, an important thing that is taught for children, for teenagers. And we had, this was exciting. You know, I could go on this stuff, but you said we need to wrap it up here pretty soon. Let me tell you this. I'm not too involved with the youth. I bring some of them. And I've raised a few that who are now in the youth. Last Sunday morning, after the sermon was preached by our pastor, the pastor called down our youth minister to the pulpit. And I knew they had been on a True Love Waits weekend. It started last Friday with a big Valentine party. I popped in on them. Our black youth, our white youth. And then they had a whole weekend until Sunday morning and staying in different people's homes Friday and Saturday night. I don't know what all they did. But, you know, I mean, sure they teach them some of the Bible and teach them principles like this, but they have fun. Okay, Brian stood up there and told us a little about the weekend, and then he told us about having had given an opportunity, all of them didn't sign, giving the kids an opportunity to sign a little commitment, which meant they were making a commitment to wait, to carry on proper relationships with boyfriends and girlfriends. And then he asked the kids to come down. And they just came right on down there. We had five blacks and probably a few more than that whites. And, you know, I was so proud. I was so proud, and their mamas were not here. Of course, their mamas. But to tell you the truth, even if they had known that this was going to be a recognition of these kids, probably most of the moms, this is a sad thing to say, but it's true. We've tried. I remember, I guess it was last Christmas, our pastor sent out a letter to some of the moms. We tried intentionally. I like that word. We made a specific effort to get them here. Not many came. But, you know, this would have been a great time. In other words, the white parents were here, you know. They came up. Brian asked them to stand with your teenager. Okay, several of us. This made me proud, too. Of course, I went down there, stood behind a couple. But other white people came down. You know, they probably knew their parents weren't here. And, of course, we hadn't invited them for this, you know. But most of them wouldn't have been here anyway, I don't think. We stood with them. We stood with them. Hand on shoulder, this type of thing, you know. We were proud. And a tremendous commitment they made. So this type of thing is happening. This type of thing is happening. Another thing, in the summertime, Maine, we have Bible clubs. Of course, this is done all over Durham. I mean, not just here, but here, but everywhere, that they can find a place, a home, just usually a home or some central place like a daycare center or something where children are ordered gathered. You know, they have Bible clubs. Here again, teaching in children's language. Teaching in children's language, and it's not working very well yet because it's such a massive follow-up, but this church is supposed to be responsible to follow up on all the clubs around us, which would be mostly black and Hispanic, follow up on unchurched kids and those who make professions, that by that I mean who make a commitment to Jesus as becoming a Christian. But, you know, we don't get it done. That's a shame. And our pastor, I told him something about this the other day, he said, we just need to pray for more laborers. So it's massive, but, you know, I think our goals are in place, and God has led us this far since the beginning, the little kids coming around to see, hear what was going on with Joyce's accordion. So much has happened. Now, you ask about the community. I think I pretty well described that. You know, a change in time. At first, the black moving in, whites moving out. We still have one white member, a little old lady white lives right over here, and one of John Blake's assistants who's coordinating the Extra Good News program lives with her, which is black community, and a few Hispanics around, lots of Hispanics elsewhere. So in this northeast central Durham, I like that. That's another important thing in ministry, that a leader, which sometimes would be a white person, John's white, would live there. And I just went to Miss Price down there, knowing she was the only white person I knew around there, member of this church, and said, Miss Price, so we got a young man coming in here. Could he live with you? And she practically gave him a room. I think $50 a month. Can you believe that? Feeds him some of the time. So this is how it worked. That's another thing that intentionally needs to be done. The whites living in the community, identifying with the community, learning to know the kids on your street. And then some of these kids who live beside him, well, this theoretically, see him on a stage over at Extra Good News on Saturday. He's one of us. That's important.
You said the blacks moved in. Do you know when that was? Or was that?
Probably. Let me just guess, Angela, late 60s. And I remember, for instance, in this first big house on the left down here, when two white sisters, aging now a little bit, lived there, had a lot of flowers around and so forth. So I do remember, and still some whites there. I would say most of them, some of them with drink problems, they move in here, get a room, and, you know, sort of, that's their life, you know. But these, you know, were fine ladies. In fact, I think maybe they might have at one time been a member of the church. But anyway, white ladies, this was now after we started our visitation around here. So that would have been maybe late 70s or 80s. And I remember them. I can tell you other good things about that house down there. But, you know, just people like us, you know, I mean, they had just lived there. And finally they moved because they were getting older and needed to go with son, you know, and they moved out. And so, which was normal movement.
So we had blacks moving in, making the predominantly
Black predominantly community. Black. And then somewhere along the way, let's say, when did the Hispanics start? What, 5 years ago or something? Yeah. Whenever, because of the good economy here. You know, these adults can get jobs. I know Blanca's father is a painter. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. He probably can't speak real good English yet. I don't know. I haven't talked with him, but I know her mother's, I guess, just sort of learning English. Mm-hmm. So I assume he's at that stage, the stepfather. And Blanca told me he was a painter. I asked her, what does he do? So they come in here, they want to work, these Hispanic people. That's why they come here, really, because the economy is so good, they can get a job without even speaking English. Right. So it's another blessing, our good economy here, one of the best in the state, certainly, and the good environment, yet not a big, big city like Atlanta. And I'm glad these things are happening. So it was a transition there. Whites, some years ago, then the blacks, almost 100%, few whites around. Right back behind Jackie, she brought in a little white boy.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What challenges do this Latino influx, what challenges does that pose to your work?
What kind of what?
Challenges.
Challenge.
I think you've touched
on. I tell you, we're for the poor.
Yeah.
You know, there's a verse in the fourth chapter of Luke that I think Jesus spoke in his first sermon or first message. It said something like, I'm anointed to minister to the poor, to the depressed. You probably remember that. To those in prison. We have a prison ministry I'm not involved with, but another man. To people who are down in some way or another, economically, socially, looking for a job, leave their country to try to better themselves. Of course, the main thing, I must say, you know, the main thing, Angela, we do a lot of things, at least some things, to help them in any way that we can. But the main thing is to expose them to the message of Jesus Christ. But, you know, we don't force anything. We don't force anything. They've got to make that decision. Even though they trust me, I can't save them. So I think you see where I'm coming from. And so the challenge, certainly, it's overall, it's holistic, W-H-O-L-E, whole. Hopefully a little bit H-O-L-Y too, but we want to help them in any way. But the main reason and the main challenge is their spiritual life. But I can't make that decision for them. People that's music teachers tonight, Joyce cannot make that decision for them. But as they're exposed to this, as they are impacted from different ways, the program at the Y, the program at Extra Good News, the Bible Club in the summers, the programs here on Sunday night, music and GAs, the youth program on Sunday afternoon is their big program. They'll have one tonight. These things begin influencing their lives. They begin thinking. And then I've had the opportunity to say, have you become a Christian? That's not where I am most of the time. That's what I'm for. That's my end purpose. But it's usually someone else leading them to Christ and Christianity. It's in the youth program that Brian asked who is ready to accept Christ. And about all I would do, I'm right now probably going to take the lead in getting several of these kids. I've already talked with one or two of them about getting into our new members class. This is our first step after you become a Christian. We'll say, so you understand, especially with children, this is important. You understand your decision, what you committed to, and you understand something about the church. You know, before they, and then they, if they need to be baptized, they're baptized, and adults, children, either way, and they become, you might say, an official member of the church.
Is there any way to give sort of a rough estimate in terms of how many black children, how many Hispanic children are part of this church?
This church? If you were here tonight, mm-hmm. If we pick up the average number, there would probably be about, on my little youth team, that's all blacks and Blanca, who have sort of developed here, you know, become sort of young leaders. They're helping in Extra Good News. They're quiet seat watchers. They sort of monitor. You know, they walk around, got a job to do. That's important. Mm-hmm. But some of those kids would be here, and then some walk-ins. Let's say 7 or 8 youth, black youth. No Hispanic youth yet. I don't know of one. In fact, I haven't met any. I've seen them around, but I haven't really met. I have not begun a friendship relationship with any Hispanic youth. By that, I mean teenager.
Or adults, would that also
Just parents, occasionally.
Okay.
just occasionally. I think maybe we've had, I think Blanca's mother came one time to something special that she was going to be in, whatever. We've got a lot of work to do there, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, they haven't been here a long time, but, you know, we're focusing in now. They're all out there. Okay, that would be about the number of youth that Brian would be working with, his youth minister. Children, elementary, approximate age 6 to 11 or whatever, 12. There would be a bigger number of them. Jackie and I will be picking up. She'll meet me here about 5 o'clock. We have to have two adults on the van for safety purposes and care for the children. So we would pick up maybe a dozen kids, maybe less, maybe one more. Mm-hmm. And then what will happen, more, some will have walked in, or maybe a parent has brought some. And so we'll have more going back. So we might have a, you know, a jam-packed, pretty full, maybe overfill van going back. Because, you know, one or two, like sometimes the parents of two of ours who have grown up, who are now youth, and they have two little ones, their parents bring them. That's what needs to happen more and more. Parents need to get involved, too. But occasionally a parent would bring them, or I just tell them I can't. You know, I can't do everything. Would bring them. Then we would take them back. We've agreed to do that, you know. So that would mean four more kids on the bus, on the van. And so you might have 15 kids on there going back, children, and then those six or eight youth, mm-hmm. so 20-something.
Do you see any distinct needs that the Latino community needs, being new, that African-Americans or whites may not need? Are there any
distinct about them?
You know, different concerns that you mm-hmm. see in the Latino community that needs addressing, more so than mm-hmm. other things? Or?
Well, the blacks, you know, are natives here. I mean, they're, you know, like the whites. So they know better how to get jobs. Some of them don't get the job. Jobs are available here. I mean, anybody can get a job. I took a, this was a white lady that lives over there. Got 8 children now. Real difficult situation. Single mom. I took her after we began trying to help her and her children several years ago. She was just getting off drugs, at least not many months before. Mm-hmm. And took her over to McDonald's over at Wellens Village. She walked in, got a job, walked out, had a job. And she's still working for McDonald's. So that's a big plus for her.
Yeah.
That was like 4 or 5 years ago. So you can get jobs, you know, I mean, even if you can't speak English. And so this is a good, big plus for our community economically. Mm-hmm. But you're asking distinct problems amongst the Hispanics. The language. But the children pick it up fast. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of a negative. I hate to see them spending so much of their money on drinking. You go over, I'm thinking of Juniper Apartments over there, which, say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, would be almost 100% black. Mm-hmm. Now it's almost 100% Hispanic. So that's another area that, for some reason, that this transition has taken place. Okay, you can go over there, maybe any day, but basically after work on Friday and the weekend, you know, sometimes you can see maybe a small pile of beer cans over in the mm-hmm. field. So this is unfortunate, you know, spending money like that. And but those apartments, you know, are, you know, they're rather inexpensive, but they cost something. I have a part of what I do for the inner city poor and in our ministry to international students at Duke, we give away furniture. Mm-hmm. People of this church and other churches, individuals, I'll be working tomorrow a bunch of hours collecting furniture and giving it to people who have indicated they need it. But I want to focus in on the Hispanics to see really what their needs are. I need to get into some of their houses or their apartments and see what they need. I pretty well, I guess, know what the blacks need or don't need over there. You know, I've been out there a long time and into some of their homes. But I'm guessing it's just management of money. See, they're working, painter like Blanca's stepfather. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they got everything they need in the house. I know I heard her tell Jackie the other day that her heat wasn't working. So Jackie was going to try to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I did ask Blanca the other day, is her heat working? She said, yes. So I don't really exactly know what the situation is there now, but so they have some needs. I think there is some progress being made to give them a voice to, I think there's a clinic, isn't there somewhere maybe for Hispanic people here? I think when my doctor retired, I think I maybe mentioned something about the opportunity he could go over there and help these people. But I think certainly efforts are being made to help them in various social ways. But I need to get into those homes, see what there is there. And that's about, I guess, what I know.
Right now, how would you characterize Latino African American relations?
I see them on our church, on our church van. And usually we don't have incidents like between the 9-year-old girl and the young teenager black boy. Because I know that black boy, he's one of on my youth team. But kids are going to get into little verbal conflict.
Could you briefly recount that, just briefly, and what happened?
Okay, you want me to get more specific. All right, I think it was true. At least this is what Terrence said, and I think the Hispanic girl could not deny it. She called him chocolate. And he resented that, and I can understand that. I know Terrence. I know about his football at Chuning High School, where my son went years ago and played football. I know one of the guys that coached my son. He's an administrator. I know these kids in varying degrees. Okay, he's one that we consider having developed here, and he's one of the youth team now, my youth team, blacks and Blanca. He's not a youth yet, but... okay, that's the word that should not have been said by her. I don't know, let's see. I didn't hear everything because I was driving the van. What was Terrence saying to her that was inappropriate? Something that, provoked her. Maybe a similar thing, a slide remark, something like that. But anyway, they were sort of arguing, and as far as I know, they didn't hit each other. But then Blanca got off first. She was mad. We saw that. She threw down that book bag, banged on the door, went in, but then came back out to get the book bag. By then, Terrence and I were over there and sort of her around her house. And that's when they apologized to each other. I think probably I had suggested, Terrence, you think you need to apologize to her? Mm-hmm. And he did. And then asked her, do you owe me an apology? She did immediately. That was so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness, reconciliation. But I don't really remember many of the words, but they were mad at each other and saying some things they shouldn't say, like chocolate.
So how, in your mind, can Latinos and African Americans?
I think generally, as we see it, Terrence and his family, his mom and dad and a sister still live there in Juniper Apartments, but there are a few blacks still living there, mostly Hispanic though. Mm-hmm. And I would say fairly well relationship. Now, on the other hand, I do see them, coming into like Juniper Apartments, whereas blacks 5 years ago were maybe 100%. Now it's almost 100% Hispanic. Right. Few blacks remaining.
You also mentioned
but this fairly well getting along. I don't know between parents, between a Hispanic man like Blanca's stepfather, who's a painter now and probably can't speak good English, but he's making some pretty good money as a painter. So with an employer who would maybe be white, maybe be black, I don't know the relationships much between the adults. I don't know many or any bad relationships. Give them a plus there, benefit of the doubt. I see the children, and that does not often happen because we have, I guess, sometime every week nearly, blacks and white on the same 15-seater van. Mm-hmm. And pretty good. They get along. And they're in extra good news over there. Boys, blacks, and Hispanics yelling together, back and forth. So pretty good relationship. But it's not perfect like the instance I gave you there. They go to school together, and... let's see if I've covered the ministries. We talked about trust, choir, civil rights, Unfortunately, I don't remember a lot of that specifically, mainly what I read in newspapers, TV, and stuff. But we had our share of it here, I guess. Our share.
Just sort of to press just a little bit further, I think throughout our conversation, you pointed to keys to basically developing a strong, diverse, loving community.
I think we've learned how to do it.
What are some of the most important things that can lead to that?
Okay, good question. And this is the great reward. Mm-hmm. See, when we can know these kids and others know these kids have developed.
And again, see, this is a process.
Takes several years, right, but I was talking with John Blake the other day, and we've been into large inner city ministries in places like Chicago and New York, Brooklyn, ghettos. Thousands
you
of
yourself or
oh, yeah, we've been there. We intentionally go there to try to learn what's going on. Like in Chicago, there's the in one of the large ministries there, and they're over 20 in Chicago, various sizes. There's the largest private, and this is Christian, medical clinic in America for poor people. For poor people. And these would be different races, blacks, Hispanic. There are a lot of Asians anyway up there. Well, that's not Hispanic, what am I talking about? But anyway, different races, different national background. And it's a huge operation, a staff of doctors, nurses, I think 100 or more people just in the clinic staff. That's big. Biggest private medical clinic for the poor in America. We've been in this. We've seen it. People waiting, nice, not like Duke, but nice. Nice enough. In the ghettos. All right, we learn constantly. We learn reading. We learn we want to learn. All we can learn, we want to learn hands-on out here, plus how others are doing it successfully. So, and then, you just, 5 years ago, say, when a couple of the kids whom I'm thinking about were little kids. They're young youth now. They've developed. They've got, more levels to go. But I would not have known, probably, I would have hoped, but that this would happen. Now I see it happen. So that's very motivating to know that it can happen. And let's say it took 5 years, but I think we can reduce that time. I think reading a book from a man who started this huge ministry in Chicago, he would say it takes 15 years. I know a black girl who had a mom. I don't know the mom. I know the girl. She took us a tour of the place. And I remember her saying, I'm in the book. The story of this girl, now young adult, was in the book he had written. And it tells about her, I think, drug-addicted mom and how she became a Christian. And I think this girl went to college. Now, she's a major staff person at that organization. So that's huge development and taking responsibility. Here, we've seen it happen. That's very motivating. Mm-hmm. I think we can reduce from 5 years to, I was telling John, to 2 or 3 because we've got different things going on. The why, the activities here, the youth programs, going out for a program Valentine's thing like they had last weekend, different people's homes, exposure to different, and these would have probably, I'm guessing, were all white homes that they were in. Of course, white and black kids. The different things going on, the extra good news, the summer Bible clubs, that some will be right back here. Of course, this goes all around Durham. But the various things that are impacting, it makes it easier and, I think, quicker. It's bad. Yeah.
So your ultimate goal for Northeast Central Durham community would be what?
To see... Okay, I'm going to put it real straight. Now, this is what I see you like, real straight. And this was picked up from a video about Metro Ministries in Brooklyn, the ghettos of Brooklyn. This was a professionally done video showing the ministry there and having, in this case, a pediatrician, a white pediatrician, talking about the children in Chicago, we'll say urban, inner city Chicago. Also, I think a police officer was talking about all the drugs. And then they showed all this stuff. And then the ministry to the children, reaching thousands. And, but she said, and this is one of the things that rings in our heads, to save a generation of children, so that another generation will not be lost. Not just lost spiritually, yes, probably lost spiritually, but lost in most every way, educationally, with adequate employment opportunities, maybe inadequate training. Like in the case of Teresa's children who are now here, youth developed to some degree from down here, mm-hmm. saying this is the only church they've ever known. This church did something. People here did something productive in their lives. And I'm not the only one that would say that. I guess to save generations, maybe part of a generation right now, say more specifically, part of the seven-year-olds. We can't get them all this year. I hope maybe in 10 years, 5 years maybe, we can have maybe dozens, if not several hundred, whom we have impacted through the various ministries. Lives change. And another goal would be to see a reduction in time. And I think that can happen because we're impacting from so many directions now. See, back there it was just Lonzo and me walking around, a few other guys, you know? So when you have it coming from you different ways, and a lot of it fun, like at the Y, like at Extra Good News, all the excitement and everything, like the activities here, choir, spiritual and fun, I guess. But when you're coming in so many, it's bound to reduce the time it takes.
Absolutely. Well,
that's a goal.
Nice. And just any final thoughts, anything that we haven't talked about?
We have some other goals, Angela. Mm-hmm. One I referred to a while ago. I started some time back, or several of us, and several of us were helping then in Christian's 12-step program for drug addicts and alcoholics. This is taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You've probably heard of them, which are biblically based, and giving more Christian perspective to it. Not forcing anybody, but, you know, sitting down, and I've done this. We had several Bible studies going in various homes called Oxford Houses, which are houses that have a very unstructured program. They run everything, but if you get on drugs again, you're out. You know, it's that simple. You have to talk to the guys who are living there to see if you get in. I've heard this interview type thing. It makes a lot of sense. A man who was an alcoholic started this thing some years ago. And so Oxford Houses are across America today, and we were involved with Oxford Houses. This church helped furnish a couple of them. In fact, one of this house that I told you about, the little old ladies lived in some years ago, moved out. It became the first women's house. It was an Oxford house, but maybe the first women's house of any kind for drug-addicted women. Mm-hmm. We helped furnish. We put practically everything in it. Lots of money came from this church, just donations. Not part of the budget, but just people wanted to help. So it's something that needs to be done, and it's one of my goals to see this revived. And another goal that I touched on a while ago, knowing that it's happening all across America, and the percentages are high because not many people live downtown right now, except over in here, you know, not downtown in these renovated buildings that these basketball players are pumping investment into, but into those apartments, which